Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on marriage when we come back. Well, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated. It's a regulated enterprise by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and your local family court. The best part about this marriage contract is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Marriage is the most important and the most expensive contract that you can get involved in. It's more binding than your military enlistment or your home mortgage, and you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Two-thirds of all marriages in this country end in divorce, but whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against some breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you ought to know and understand the terms and conditions of this marriage contract, your state statutes, before you marry, and you should write that instead of letting the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and that marriage contract. Just call us direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative. It's free. And you can go online, georgegordon.org. That's easy to remember, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, last time I started off here with Exodus 21, verses 7 to 11. We're getting down to dowries and bride price, which I pointed out to you goes along with the inheritance law. Marriage is a business. And it has become a state-licensed business. Well, it ought not to be a state-licensed business. It's always been a business. God has always recognized, I'm talking about the God of Abraham, now he's always recognized marriage as a business. Proverbs 31 talks about a businesswoman, talks about a good wife. What are the attributes of a good wife? And he lays them out there in Proverbs chapter 31. This woman is a businesswoman. Well, she's not working, you know, for some corporation. She isn't bumping into the glass ceiling. Hell, she owns her own land. She owns her own business, has her own hired help. She's the CEO. She's not working for somebody. And she's dressing her husband. She is supporting her husband. She is not out working because she's supporting the family, but she's out working because that's part of her enterprise, property. She's a property holder. And so I often wonder, you know, why do you women want to compete with men and work in the workplace and work out here for wages? When you should be, could be, ought to be, were designed to be the master. Why do you want to be the servant? Well, it's a choice that you made, and I guess, you know, if that's what you want to do, you don't get after it. 11% of the people in the armed services are women. Women are specifically excluded from the military. Specifically. God gave you that benefit, ladies. He said, listen, if somebody wants to compel you to go out here and fight to make the world safe for Exxon and General Motors, you tell them to kiss off. And you got it straight from me. You got 11% of the women over there in Iraq getting shot at over there, volunteered, wanted to go in the army. Wanted to serve Baal, I guess. I don't know, the religious people. Well, last time we talked about this thing of interracial marriage and miscegenation, and I thought I'd point out to you that in Judges chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, Samson, remember that famous guy, Samson and Delilah, you know, the guy that went out there and raised hell with these Philistines all the time? Well, he's the guy. Did you know that he practiced miscegenation? He broke this law. He went out and he married a strange wife, a Philistine, a strange woman, a woman of another race. He did that. And his parents, his daddy, asked him the question. He said, son, aren't there any women in Israel that you got to go down here and marry one of these heathens, one of these pagans? Oh, he went out and got this woman for him, but he told him that he was making a mistake. Ultimately, it cost him his life. Women were his downfall, just like they were Solomon. He couldn't handle his women. Some people can't handle their booze. Some people can't handle their women. Some people can't handle either one. Another guy by the name of Esau. Do you remember Esau? Esau had an inheritance. He was the firstborn son. Went out and married two strange wives and lost his inheritance. Hey, there's been nothing but hate and discontent in that family from that day to this, and that's our family. If you want to know why we're in Iraq, it's over Esau marrying them two strange women. Hey, you want to know why the Jews and the Palestinians are at it? It's because of Esau marrying them two strange women. And then there's a third character in here, a guy by the name of Judah. That's my great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, old Judah. I'm from the Zerah line. Queen Elizabeth is from the Pharaoh's line. Little Georgie Gordon's from the other side of the family. Hey, that caused no end of hate and discontent. Judah married a black woman, a Canaanite. Hey, he was just as modern and up-to-date as Americans are today. He didn't see anything wrong with marrying outside of his race. He was ecumenical. You know, he was all for equality of the races, and you know, he didn't want to discriminate against anybody. He just got right after it. And that thing degenerated into a big family fight. You want to know why the English, the Irish, and the Scots have been fighting with one another from that day to this? That was over that marriage. Been fighting. You want to know why the Messiah died? It was over that marriage right there. In fact, the Pharisees, you know, said, "We be not born of fornication." Jesus never denied that he was born from fornication. And so, you know, this thing of inheritance and marriage are pretty important, and it stirred up some of the greatest hatreds and discontents in the world today. You know, it's kind of strange, too, because, you know, all you Arabs out there, you know, you people are our cousins. Of course, you people know that. It's just us dummies over here. We don't know that. I guess, I'm sorry, I don't need to tell you Arabs out there that you and I are cousins. I guess I need to tell our guys over here, hey, you white boys, did you know you guys not only can't play basketball, you can't follow your genealogy either. Those white guys, you know, the Germans and the English and the Scotch and the Irish and all those guys. Yeah, those Arabs over there are our cousins, and here we are over there fighting with them. What are we doing that for? Cousins. Yeah, tell you how that happened. Old Abraham, you know, didn't have any children, so his wife, Sarah, who was an old lady, I mean, hell, she was 90 years old, you know, and she didn't have any children, and she wanted to have a baby, and so Abraham was a little bummed out because, you see, he had a guy who was his bondservant in his household, and he had a son born in his household, and he was going to become Abraham's heir, and Abraham was a little bummed out about that, and he said, why should this servant's son be my heir, because I don't have any children? So Sarah, recognizing that as one of the disabilities, said she's got a handmaid by the name of Hagar, and she said to Abraham, you take Hagar, my handmaid, to wife, have a baby through her, and give the baby to me. Now that's kind of important. Abraham was a polygamist. Did you know that? Yeah. Old Abe had two wives at the same time. One's called a concubine, and one's called a wife. Now, a wife inherits, and a concubine is a wife that does not inherit. So this marriage thing, like I said, it's business. It has a lot to do with inheritance, and that's why these two are kind of intertwined. Kind of hell. They're absolutely intertwined. Can't have one without the other. Well, anyway, Hagar, nice lady that she was, had a little baby boy, and they named him Ishmael. God came up to Abraham one day and he said, this Ishmael kid over here, he ain't going to cut the mustard. And he's not going to be your heir. Abraham said, oh my God, God, this boy Ishmael might walk before you. And he said, no. And you know why you Arabs don't like us? Because you guys think that Ishmael should be the heir and Isaac shouldn't be. That's what the bitch is all about. And of course, our guys got the birthright. The Israelites got all the benefits. But you know, you Arabs haven't done too shabby. You know, yeah, you know, you shouldn't complain too much. And that's because God said, no, Ishmael's going to get a bunch. We're going to give him gifts. And when Hagar left with Ishmael, she walked out of there with her pockets full. I don't know how much she walked out with, but it was a bunch. And you Arabs today are sitting on top of all the oil in the world. But God said that you Arabs are going to be wild men. Boy, is that ever true. I mean, you guys are about the wildest guys that we ever came in contact with. But, you know, sitting over here as a Scotsman, I'm saying, what in the hell are we over there fighting with them Arabs for? You know, what's that all about? You know, we ought to be the best of buddies. We're cousins. I wouldn't say kissing cousins, but, you know, we're cousins. We should be over there buying oil from you guys and paying you guys in gold, and you guys over there ought to be selling us oil and buying our jet airplanes, and, you know, we should just be doing business. But we went over there, and we screwed you over and stole your oil, and you guys are mad about that. And, you know, honest to God, I can't really blame you. I just wanted to point out that it wasn't the Gordons that went over and stole the oil from you. It was the Rockefellers. You know, so get after the right guys. But the Rockefellers did it with our permission after we voted them into office. So I guess it's really my fault, isn't it? Well, let me hand you my apologies. And then I just wanted to let you know that our God over there now, he's kind of a hard head. And he says that he's going to lean on us about seven times, and he's going to kick our heinies right up between our eyebrows. So why don't you sit back and relax, watch the world go by, and watch our God destroy us, because that's what's coming. So I thought I'd share with you that Judah, Samson, and Esau all practiced miscegenation, all three of those guys. And it's not, they're not the only guys that have done it, but I wanted to point out it's against the law, and we ought not to do it, and if we've done it, we ought to stop, and if we stop, we ought to make restitution for it. And there's a methodology for doing that in Ezra and Nehemiah. Now, this brings us up to another form of marriage called common law marriage. Remember I said there's three kinds. You got civil law marriage, common law marriage, and patriarchal marriage. Going back to the student section in Tennessee, talking about common law marriage, it says no particular form was required to be observed by the parties entering into it. It's a simple agreement by a man and woman that they should live together as man and wife, and it constituted a valid marriage. This common law form, which existed in England and in some of the states in the earlier development of our nation, due to the vast space, difficult traveling facilities, and the scarcity of squires, has been abrogated in many states today, including Tennessee, by statute. Wasn't that just real special of those Tennesseans? See, God made a mistake, and so, shucks, they just jumped right in there and fixed his mistake. God should be real pleased with you guys in Tennessee. These statutes dealing with this subject, according to Vernier, fall into five classes. So here's the five classes of common law marriage. Those that specifically validate common law marriages, that's number one. Those that specifically validate common law marriages. Two, those that set out laws requiring a definite procedure to be followed to be married, but they say nothing about common law marriages. Three, those that specifically declare common law marriages invalid. Four, those that say some technicality in the performance of the requirements will not invalidate the marriage. Five, and those that have been construed by the courts to be mandatory, thereby invalidating all such marriages. All right. Tennessee is placed in this last category by all of the authorities. Our statutes require that a license must issue from the county in which the female resides. Underline that. In which the female resides, or where the marriage is solemnized, you know, where you go to the preacher and have him say some words over you. The parties must declare in the presence of a minister or officer that they accept each other as man and wife, and the parties must be of a certain age. A recital of the performance of the ceremony must be endorsed on the back of the license, and the license must be returned to the county of origin. Hey, makes all the sense in the world. Think about it. Our statutes require that a license must issue from the county in which the female resides. See, in the old days, a young suitor would come up to the father of the female and say, I would like to marry your daughter. And so that's what the young male is doing here. He comes to the county, the owner of the girl, to seek permission to marry the girl. And that's because the county owns the girl. She's got a birth certificate, doesn't she? Well, isn't that just real special? And so these two state entities, the boy and the girl, go to the state to contract with the state, which is what the boy does when he comes to the father of the bride and contracts with the father over the object of the contract, that is the chattel, the property, the goods, the girl. It's a contract. Contracts deal with business. Marriage is a business. And then, you ever notice that when you have this marriage ceremony, well, if you have a big one, you have this big wedding, you know, they start off with the music, and then here's the preacher, and he's sitting down here at the altar, and then here comes the girl, but she's not coming with the boy. She's walking down the aisle with her father. Where's the groom? Oh, he's up at the altar with the preacher. And this is a public ceremony in which the father gives the bride away. Well, excuse me, but why don't we give the groom away? Why isn't the bride standing up there at the altar, and why isn't the mother of the groom coming down the aisle and giving the groom to the bride? What is this process that we're seeing here? I don't think there's one person in a thousand understands the legal ramifications of what these marriages are all about. We engage in them. We go down and buy licenses. We don't know what the hell the terms and conditions of the contracts are. We don't know why we're doing what we do. We end up in divorce court and don't understand a word of it. We curse it. We're angry about it. We don't like the results that come from it, but we certainly don't understand it, do we? Well, now, the reason that this girl is being given to the bridegroom is because the bridegroom paid the bride price, the dowry. He paid money for this girl. This is a public execution of a legal duty on the part of the father, who is divesting himself of a liability and passing this liability, this female, onto this husband. God, I can just see you women out there. You're just jumping up and down, sitting on the edge of your seats over there, just meaner than cat dirt. What do you mean, chattel property being sold? Yeah, that's right. Chattel property being sold. Remember, that's one of your benefits. You got that from God, remember? Of course, you ladies out there didn't understand a benefit from a liability, and so you went out and joined the communists. Phyllis Schlafly said, I don't want to join the communists. Remember, that was that lady I couldn't think of last night. Phyllis Schlafly, she's the lady that was against the Equal Rights Amendment that all you ladies were jumping up and down trying to get passed, remember, back in the 70s? Yeah, Phyllis Schlafly understood this. She said, I don't want common equality. I already have superiority. And the superiority is that you're not obligated to support yourselves. A female in Israel has to be supported, has to be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. Girls, you got to be taken care of from the day you're born to the day you die. Supported. And the guy that supports you is your daddy. Now, when you get to be a big girl, you know, big girls eat a lot, and big girls are a liability to their daddies. They're called old maids. And they're called old maids because they're not married yet. Until they marry, they stay right there in their daddy's house eating daddy's grub. And daddy says, I got to get rid of this girl. So he goes out looking for a husband called a groom. And he says, hey, come over here. I got this real neat girl at home. And I'd like you to marry her. And this guy says, well, why would I want to marry your daughter? Well, because my daughter has a dowry. Dowry? And the boy might say, what's that? My daughter has a $100,000 dowry. She is an heiress. She's worth a lot of money. She's ugly as sin, dumb as a post, but she's got a lot of money. And all of a sudden, the groom looks over, you know, and he says, woo, $100,000 will cover a lot of pimples, cover a lot of dumbs. So he says, okay, yeah, I'll marry your daughter. And so here's daddy brings the bride down the aisle and makes a public display of giving the daughter to the groom who is going to take this woman to be his lawful wedded wife. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that this girl ain't dumb and she's really pretty. Boys, they notice pretty girls. Girls like Elizabeth Taylor. You don't have to pay a whole bunch of money to get rid of Elizabeth Taylor. No. No, sir. Now, boys are pretty astute observers of females. And they note the legs and they note the breasts. They're very astute and they take a look at that. And if they got the right combination, shucks, you don't have to pay those boys nothing. They'd be there like a bull knocking the stanchion down trying to get her to heifer and heat. He wants her. And so daddy, not being a dummy, knowing that there's a duty called a dowry, an inheritance that goes to his daughter, which is a duty that God said, a righteous man gives an inheritance to his children's children. And daughters are children. And we have one law in Israel, and if there's going to be an inheritance for the boys, well, girls, there's got to be an inheritance for you. And that's called your dowry. Some girls call them hope chests. Well, this dowry is your inheritance, and when you leave your father's house and go to your husband's house, your inheritance changes from your father to your husband. This is why my granny used to say she married well, and she didn't marry so well. You know, if you marry a guy that's got a lot of money, you married well. If he doesn't have a pot to pee and a place to put it or a window to throw it out of, as old granny used to say, well, then you didn't marry so good. All right, so let's go back to the beginning. Pretty girls that are talented, have ability, skills, are sold for the bride price. And girls that aren't so well endowed, girls that are a little chunky, girls that don't have all of the amenities that, you know, some other girls have, like Elizabeth Taylor, you know, they go out with a dowry. Now, in both cases, it's the inheritance of the female who's leaving home. Either dad puts it up or the bridegroom puts it up. So now if you've got a real pretty girl, you say to the bridegroom, I want $100,000 for that girl, $50,000, $40,000, $10,000. And if she's kind of homely, plain, ugly, or just plain stupid, you might have to put up $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 to get rid of her. Just kind of depends. This is where you get this statute now in Exodus 21, verses 7 through 11. It's the dowry or the inheritance statute for females. Now, this common law marriage is something different. Common law marriage is a contract between the boy and the girl. This dowry we're talking about is a contract between the boy, the bridegroom, and the girl's father. The girl is not party to the contract. And this contract only exists until consummation. That's called penetration. That's the other half of the marriage agreement. Now, I know right away what you girls are saying. You're sitting there saying, oh, my God, now here's this animal selling us women into bond servitude against our will and over our objection. Now, calm down, would you? You know, this dumb God over here that came up with this dumb law also had an answer for that. He didn't want to make you mad, girls. So he said, remember we were talking about this last time in Numbers chapter 36. And then so in verse 6, here's what he says to you ladies out there. He says, and this thing which the Lord does command concerning the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, let them marry to whom they think best. Only to the family of the tribe of their father shall they marry. All right, so let's carry that out to its logical conclusion. I got a girl here now. She's 18. And she's now of marrying age. She doesn't have to marry in the next year or two or five, but, you know, things happen. And so we come to her. That's our daughter. Now she's our heiress. And she's going to inherit everything here. And so she's pretty valuable. You know, maybe she's not an Elizabeth Taylor, but, you know, with the dowry the size that girl's walking out of here with, that ought to cover a lot of pimples and a lot of dumbs. And she's the heiress. But on top of that, she's not dumb and she's pretty good looking. In fact, you know, when we go down the list over here, I'll read you a list here pretty shortly, and I'll say, well, here's what I think a girl ought to aspire to, or what we're looking for. And this girl, there's 35 things that I'm looking for in a woman, and this woman's got all 35. Boy, now that's pretty good. If you wrote up a list of the 35 things that you're looking for in a wife, and you ran across some woman that possessed all 35 of those, would she be worth $100,000? I know it's a foreign and alien concept, But, you know, we're not forcing this girl to marry anybody. She's going to find some guy out here and she'll say, Dad, what do you think of this guy? And I'm going to size this guy up. And that's because, see, I'm an old man full of years. I know what this guy's looking at. He isn't looking any further than her chest line. You know, he's got a problem with the little head ruling over the big head. So, old men and old grannies look out for young virgin girls. And we say, well, no, daughter, this guy over here just got one thing on his mind. So let's go a little deeper and find out, well, what's his family like? Let's write up 35 things that we're looking for in a husband. And let's see if this guy measures up to 10 or 15 of these things, huh? Is this a firstborn? Does he have an inheritance? Has he got a pot to urinate in? Has he got a window to throw it out of? You know, what's this guy got to offer? You know, other than the fact that he's real groovy and, you know, he's real cool and he dances, you know, like, and, you know, but how's he going to support you? Are you going to support him? You know, a lot of you ladies out there supporting your husbands. Wait a minute. God said you don't have to serve in the military, you don't have to support your husbands, and you're not responsible for your debts. Phyllis Schlafly said, that makes me the head and not the tail. I don't know why you women want to serve in the military and support your husbands and be responsible for your debts, but for some reason, you wanted that and you got it. But let's think about this in more pragmatic terms. You can marry anybody you want. I mean, hell, if you want to run out here, I told the girl the other day, I said, you know, if you want to run out here and get laid in some guy's Chevy van, I mean, you have to be real bright to be a whore. You have to be real talented and real self-disciplined to be a virgin on your wedding night. That takes some ability. That takes some talent. To spread your legs doesn't take a lot. So, this girl then is worth more if she's a virgin. You know, boys kind of like girls, you know, the first time out rather than sloppy seconds, thirds, or ninths, just to be blunt. And so there's a statute in here in Exodus chapter 21, verses 7 through 11, that deal with the betrothal, the bride price, and how that's to be handled in conjunction with Numbers 36, verse 6, wherein the female chooses her husband, but with the guidance and the direction of her mommy and daddy. Advice and consent, kind of like our government. You know, the president appoints these ambassadors with the guidance and with the consent of the Senate. And so you get 100 guys in here, and you take a look at this guy, and you bring him in to the Senate hearing. And you say, what qualifies you to be the Senate, to be the ambassador to Russia? And the guy says, well, I speak Spanish. Do you speak any Russian? Have you ever been to Russia? Are you married to a Russian wife? Do you know anything about Russia? No, no. And so these 100 senators say, you know, we don't think this is really the right guy to be sending over here to represent us to the Russians. And so they say to the president, well, pick somebody else. And, you know, that's what I am as a daddy. You know, I'm going to look at this guy and I'm going to nix the deal. And I'll say, sweetheart, I mean, this guy over here, you know, he's not for you. He's just not the right guy. And if my daughter gets a little uppity and she says, well, Dad, ha ha, you know, I've got rights and I'm going to go elope with this guy and I'm going to marry him whether you like it or not. She can do that. And then I can do the second best thing. I can disinherit her. I can say, well, okay, sweetheart, you made your bed, now you go sleep in it. And I've got my bed, and I'll go sleep in mine. And the inheritance ain't going to you, because an inheritance, boys and girls, is a gift. Got that? Now, it's a whole lot easier to marry a husband or a wife that's got a little money and a little substance. And you want to remember that marriage is kind of a big-time deal, because we're talking about two families that are merging here. And you get some guy over here, and mom and dad don't like him. That isn't going to play out well at Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, when you bring him in. And then, you know, there's this antagonism. Now, I told you about these wars going on in Iraq. That's antagonism that goes back about 3,000 or 4,000 years. And this bitch, you know, between the English and the Dutch, excuse me, the English and the Scots and the Irish. Hey, you English guys over there, if you want to know why the Irish and the Scots hate your guts, it goes way back to ancient times. It isn't something that just developed in the last 300 or 400 years. Hey, this thing goes way, way, way back. We haven't liked you for a long time. And especially you guys collecting the birthright. That's the thing that really ticked us off. And that's why we don't like it. So if you want to know why you Scotsmen don't like the English, it's because they got the birthright. And if you want to know, you Englishmen, why it is the Scots and the Irish hate your guts, because you got the birthright and they didn't. Fighting over this inheritance. And it got back to marriage. It got back to Ur and Onan and Judah and Shelah. That's where it starts. Quite a little story there. I'm not going to bore you with all this genealogy, but just wanted to let you know that, hey, listen, this marriage thing is kind of important. Let me break in right here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Keep in mind that The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. It tells you all about us. The Law School teaches 8 schools, family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, our schedule, our archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the bride price right here. The bride price, yes, there's a sum to be paid, and in a patriarchal marriage, the object of the transaction is the female. So what we have is a contract between daddy and the boy, but it has nothing to do with the girl because she's the object of the contract. Now let's pick a number, $100,000 for this bride. Who gets the $100,000? The girl. The girl gets it. Now it's paid by the bridegroom to the girl's father. And yes, I'm sure that many, many fathers have sold their daughters and gave them nothing, and they were dirty swine. But they weren't righteous men either. And that's because a righteous man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, which means his children come first. And since we have one law in Israel, and we have to leave an inheritance to the firstborn son called the double portion, we have to leave an inheritance for all of our sons, and we have one law, so we have to leave an inheritance for our daughters. What if we got 8 kids? I had a student here the other day. He's the 3rd of 8. 3 boys and 5 girls. Where do you suppose daddy's going to get the 5 inheritances or dowries for his 5 daughters? Isn't it going to be from the 5 bride prices? Let me ask you this. Do you think that a man, when he buys a bull or a horse or a cow, he goes to the sale barn, and this animal, this horse, is put up for auction, and he sits back here and he keeps raising his fingers and he keeps bidding the price up, and pretty soon he buys this Arabian stud for $10,000. He loads up this stud in his horse trailer, he hauls him home, and then he unloads this horse that he paid $10,000 for. He takes out a whip and just beats this horse within an inch of his life. Then he doesn't feed the horse, he just starves the horse. He treats this horse abysmally until finally the horse dies. Does that sound like a very intelligent businessman to you? I've been in the cattle business for a lot of years, children, and I never treated my bulls or cows like that, and that's because they're worth a lot of money. I never saw a guy yet, you know, take care of his animals any better than I do because they're worth a lot of money. Boy, I'm real careful with my livestock. I'm just real concerned about them all the time. I'm feeding them all the time. I'm watching their weight, and I'm watching their pastures. I was just down the lane this morning, and I got out there, and I looked at the grass, and I looked at my cows, and I looked to see if any of them were gant, and I looked to see if they were eating, chewing their cud. Are you girls satisfied with the pasture you got here? Because children, let me tell you, the minute that it crosses my mind that they've eaten this pasture off, that they don't have the best. Not that they don't have enough, but that they don't have the best. I change pastures right away. Oh boy, I send them right into tall clover just as soon as they finish one pasture. Boy, I got another one ready for them. And I'm always preparing new pastures for my cows. Cows milk real well on good pasture. Starving cows don't give milk, kids. Hungry cows don't milk well. Fat, happy, contented cows give lots of milk. That's what I'm after. Now let me tell you, when you got a man who's real happy with his wife, boy, you're just going to have lots of fun, girls. You got a man that ain't too happy with you, and he ain't going to be near as much fun. So it's kind of necessary that you keep these men happy, girls, and that's why God has this law in here called the duty of the wife. It's called the wife's duty to her husband statute. You girls have a duty here. Yeah, you collect a lot of good benefits and fringes, but you know there's some duties. And you boys, you got some duties to perform for your wife. Did you know that? Duties. I mean, heavy duty duties. You got to feed them, clothe them, and house them. You got to support them to a standard of that they dream of becoming accustomed to. Not quite sucking on bonbons, watching The Edge of Night every day, girls, but you know something akin to it. Like old Phyllis Schlafly said, hey, listen, I got superior rights, superior benefits, and I don't want to give them up for equality. You don't want to give up your superiority for mere equality. All right, now I'm the patriarch of the family. I got a duty to provide this girl with a dowry, with an inheritance. And where am I going to get it? I'm going to get it from the bridegroom. Now, there's some precedent for this. Let me tell you a little story here. My present wife was married twice before. And one day we were driving down the road. We were just kind of tooling down the road in our motorhome. And I was just kind of sitting there quietly musing to myself. And I looked over and I said, Jack. Hey, Jack. I said, when you married Tim, you know your first husband, Tim? And she said, yeah. I said, did your daddy know you were going to marry Tim? And she said, yeah. And what'd he think of that? And she said to me, oh, he was dead set against it. In fact, she said that he wouldn't be at the wedding and that he would disinherit her if she married her first husband, Tim, her first husband. And I said, so then what'd you do? She said, well, then I eloped with Tim and ran off with him and married him. And sure enough, I was disinherited. So I said, well, why did your daddy tell you not to marry Tim? And she said, well, because he was in my daddy's Boy Scout troop and my daddy knew Tim. And my daddy knew Tim for the no-good, low-down, slow-minded jerk that he turned out to be. And I said, how long did that marriage last? And she said, 4 years. Have any kids? She said, 2. Was it a happy marriage? And she said, for the first week. End in divorce? It did. Did you have a happy divorce? No, we didn't. By the way, I haven't run across anybody that's ever had a happy divorce. If you've had a happy divorce, would you please write to me at Post Office Box 297 or to our email and tell me about your happy divorce, would you? I'd like to air that. I don't know of anybody else. I didn't have a happy divorce, and she didn't have a happy divorce. And come to find out, this kid was in her daddy's Boy Scout troop, and her daddy was about 45 years old, and this girl was about 18. Do 45-year-old men and 45-year-old women know more about picking husbands than 16, 18, 20-year-old schoolgirls? Huh? What do you think, Mom and Dad? You think you're a better judge of character? Maybe you could pick a husband or a wife for your children and score better than your children are going to score picking for themselves? Well, that marriage ended in divorce. She had 2 kids. She went off. She married another guy named Ed. And I said, hey, did your daddy know this Ed Davis that you married? And she said, oh, yeah. Yeah. I said, well, how do you know him? Well, he was in my daddy's Boy Scout troop. Now, children, that ought to tell you, don't marry Boy Scouts. No, I'm just kidding. I was in daddy's Boy Scout troop. And her daddy knew Ed Davis. And he told her, don't you marry that guy. He's a no good poor white trash from the wrong side of the tracks. And I said, well, then what'd you do? Well, I ran off and eloped with him and married him. And so he got disinherited a second time. Yeah. If there was ever a nickel that was going to come to me from my parents, it was taken away from the first marriage and doubled the second time. Yeah, I went out and I married against my parents' wishes twice. Okay, how'd it work out? Well, first week was pretty good. And then what happened then? Next 17 years were hell. Ended in divorce, it did. And I said, then you married third time. Yep. Okay. Now, girls, that kind of tells you a story right there. But there's another half to the story. There was a guy by the name of Jacob. That's your great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy about 84 generations, well, about 80, 86 or 88 generations back. And old Jacob, he wanted to marry a girl. He saw this foxy chick, and he said, wow, I want to marry that girl. He went up to her daddy and said, hey, I'd like to marry your daughter. And her daddy, his name is Laban, said, well, sure. And he set a bride price on her. I don't know what the bride price was, but it was a bunch. And Jacob said, well, that's more money than I got. And Laban said, well, that's more girl than you can handle. Jacob said, well, I'd like to give it a try. And so Laban said, well, tell you what, you work for me for 7 years, and I'll give you that girl for a wife. And Jacob, he's just happy as a clam at high tide. He said, why, of course I'll work for her for 7 years. So I got to thinking about this. Minimum wage is $5.15, isn't it? $5.15. And there's 2,000, so let's just go 2,000 hours in a year, 8 hours a day. Of course, he's working on the ranch. I know he's working more than 8 hours a day, but 5.15 times 2,000 is 10,300 a year times 7. Is $72,100. Now, let me guarantee you this. If I went to the sale barn and I paid $72,100 for a bull, that sucker would not be sleeping under the stars, and he would not get rained on. Now, I've got bulls out there in my field. They got rings in their nose, and they're dragging chains, and they sleep under the stars, and when it rains, they get wet. But I didn't pay $72,100 for them either. Now, let me tell you, girls, if I paid $72,100 for my wife, she wouldn't be sleeping under the stars and getting rained on either. Now, I think that a man is going to treat his wife a whole lot better if he pays something for her, and the more he pays, the better he's going to treat her. And I'll just bet you that Jacob was getting paid something more than $5.15 an hour. I bet you he's getting paid more like $21.50 an hour times 2,000, which equals $43,000 a year, which is the median average. So now plumbers, carpenters, and electricians getting $21.50 an hour, you know, getting the median average income per year, $43,000 a year. Let's multiply that times 7. And that totals $301,000. So don't sit there and tell me now that $100,000 bride price on my daughter is excessive, because the bride price should be more like $300,000. But I'm a pretty reasonable guy. So I think $100,000 for my daughter is a pretty reasonable price. That's a little over minimum wage, but it's something less than a craftsman, skilled craftsman's wage for 7 years. And then that will give me the money to give to my daughter, who's going to pick her own husband. I told her the other day, I said, you know, why don't you get three or four guys lined up? Let me take a look at them. You know, it's kind of like going to the sale barn. Why don't you get three or four heifers lined up down there in the sale ring, and let me scope them out, and then let me make my recommendation. You know, I'm an old dairyman. I've been in this business for a long time. I'm a pretty good judge of heifers, in my view. You know, I pick pretty good cows. Now my daughter, now she, you know, she's not dumb. She can milk, and she's, but you know, an 18-year-old girl ain't going to be picking heifers. You know, like a 60 or 70-year-old dairyman though. You take some old cattleman who's been out here chasing cows up and down, you know, the canyons of Nevada. You know that old guy. Now he kind of knows his livestock. And so you young kids would be doing well if you listen to the hoary head. God gave you a little advice there. He said, you know, when you come across somebody, some old lady with gray hair, they call that hoary head in the Bible. Hoary head, gray hair. Shut up and listen. They probably know more than you do. That's just a little advice that you got from God. You know, that dummy didn't know much to start with, that we're constantly correcting. All right, now let's go back here and let's run this by you again. The purpose for this statute in Exodus 21 is bride price. It doesn't have much to do, you know, with slavery and bond servitude. I answered that for you on that Dr. Laura series, you know, the other day. Let's look at this one again, where it says, if a man sells his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. That's translated from the Hebrew into English. It would be better, and if a man sells his daughter to be a bride, she shall not go out as the bridegrooms do. If she please not her master, the guy that wants to buy her, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. Okay, let's try this. Let's suppose some young guy comes along. Hell, it could be some old guy comes along. Says, I want to marry your daughter. I say, okay, bride price is $100,000. He says, I'll pay. He writes me a check for the $100,000. And now before the wedding, see, this is what we call engagement. They're not married. They're not having sex. Of course, now in modern America, you know, you don't have to be engaged. You know, you don't have to be married to have sex. I mean, you don't even have to be engaged. You're just casual acquaintances, just meeting as strangers in the night. You know, but I'm pointing out here that from the biblical point of view, she's betrothed now, you see. And a little while goes by, and he finds out that she's a drunken slob. I mean, this girl's an alcoholic. This girl, she's got all these good, neat virtues. But, you know, he wakes up one day and says, no, this girl isn't for me. So he comes back to me and he says, I've changed my mind. I want my money back. That girl ain't what you're claiming that she is. Well, the law requires me then to refund the money, the bride price. Now this girl over here, she's the object of the sale. If a man sells his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men do. If she pleases not her master who has betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he has dealt deceitfully with her. Hey, he agreed to marry her. Now he changed his mind. He paid the money. He's got to go back and negotiate this deal with father. He can't take her and say, hey, I bought her. Now I'm going to go sell her to somebody else. See, that's what you girls are afraid of, isn't it? There's a statute right there that prohibits that kind of conduct. You can't sell this woman to some stranger. You got to go sell her back to her daddy. And he may not give you 100 cents on the dollar there, partner. Now he's got to give you back something. But he might not give you back all of it. Depends on how shabbily he treated his daughter. Now, he goes on to say, if he has betrothed her to his son, then he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. If he takes him another wife, her food and raiment and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. If he do not these three unto her, then shall she go out free without money. And she goes out, and you get nothing back, sucker, if you've lied and stolen and cheated her. Now again, girls, this is why God has written these statutes. All these laws are designed to protect women, also known as the weaker vessel. That's why Phyllis Schlafly knows that woman's no dummy. She said, hell, what do you mean equality? What do you mean communism? Why should I want equality with men when I've already got superiority? Now, the young woman, when she leaves here, she's going to be bought, sold, traded, paid for, and that money, the bride price, is going to be given to her as her dowry, as her private property, separate from her husband. Separate. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 31. This woman over here in Proverbs 31, you know, is no slacker. She's not sitting over here wondering where her next meal is going to come from. This woman's got her own money, got her own property. Starts off here, what's a good wife look like? Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Let me tell you, girls, it doesn't take anything to spread your legs. It takes a whole lot to keep your virginity. And a virgin's worth a whole lot more than sloppy seconds, third, fifths, or ninths. got it right there from God. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her so that he shall have no need of spoil. She shall do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She's like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considers a field and she buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle doesn't go out by night. She pays the power bill. She lays her hands to the spindle and her hands hold the distaff. She stretches out her hand to the poor and she reaches forth her hands to the needy. This is a charitable woman. She isn't afraid of the snow because her household. For all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Have you priced silk clothes lately, girls? They're kind of pricey. My wife wears silk. And it's a little pricey. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen and sells it and delivers girdles to the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and her tongue is the law of kindness. This is the woman you want to go to. You know the one that's had about 4 or 5 babies of her own? The old lady with the hoary head? This is the kind of woman you want to go to, girls. I don't think I'd waste a lot of time going to pediatricians and college professors. I think this old lady here pretty much has her hands, you know, her head around the problem. She looks well to the ways of her household, and she eats not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the eternal, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. That's the kind of woman that every man would like to have. Yeah, I got one like that. Got a pretty heavy bride price on her, but not as heavy as it ought to be. You know, not as heavy as it could be. Hey, we'll be back next time talking more about this thing of marriage. There's more to come. Don't go away, folks. There's more. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course, talking about this thing of marriage. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.